Hello, Robert Crichton here, giving you a bit of an update on the whole podcast thing. So regular listeners may have noticed we've been a bit slowed down of late. The plague has taken the production side of things and left us a bit empty at the moment. That said, we've not been idle, as we've accidentally started doing rather a lot of exploring sessions via Zoom. And I was going to take that audio and put it here, but decided, with a few honourable exceptions, one of which you've heard, to leave them on YouTube. This is partly so that this podcast can do the heavy lifting of full cast audio adaptations and documentary type material and interviews and stuff that's really good at being audio, and the prep work mostly kept separate, which I think, he said, works well. If you think I'm horribly wrong about that, do let me know. We've created about 150 videos over the last few months, and it's getting crowded over there. And as I say, it does mean that we can curate and keep the better material here for you on the podcast feed. So today's episode is a bit of a demonstration of the two worlds. So it's both a past is prologue episode, looking at the opening of the truly fantastic The True Tragedy of Richard III, but it also feeds off the work we've been doing more recently on this play elsewhere on Zoom. So we're going to start with our recorded performance, which we recorded between sessions over Christmas, New Year, January-ish time, when the world is a much nicer place. And that's edited like a live performance in the way that we usually do with our past is prologue episodes. But instead of having me doing too much discursive talking about it, we will then go on to the discussion we had about it on the YouTube channel to give you a little taster of the way the exploring sessions work over there. They're slightly different to the sound mix that we've got with, say, the End Town plays, which are still slowly coming out here on the podcast. So if you enjoy the exploratory read-through when we get to it, that discussion phase, you can also follow up and visit our YouTube channel. If you found it a total drag, then don't touch that dial. Stay on the podcast. But for now, let's go to our irregularly scheduled podcast and this sort of past is prologue episode. It's a sort of past is prologue because the text of today's play does not indicate if it's broken up into acts, scenes, prologues, or induction. I mean, is this opening scene a prologue or an induction? Is it? What is it within the context of the rest of the play? Such editorial issues are interesting, but not particularly vital. We're just going to ask the usual unspoken question in past is prologue. How do you open a play? What's the first thing you throw at an audience? So today we're looking at, as it was printed in 1594, The True Tragedy of Richard III. What does this prologue induction beginning do? Well, it's mostly exposition. On a surface scan read, it does what a good prologue should do. It fills you in on the backstory, but it also asks or unasks a question about the difference between truth and fiction. The play opens with the direction, "Enters truth and poetry, to them the ghost of George, Duke of Clarence." So, two random people enter the stage. Then a ghostly figure appears and says something in Latin. The ghost exits after dropping a shield, and the two people, personifications of truth and poetry, then discuss the plot of what is to be presented, or at least the backstory for the most part. Which is, I think, enough of an introduction for you to be going on with. I'm going to let the opening of the play out now, with The Ghost of Clarence, performed by Geir Madland, Truth by Pamela Flanagan, and Poetry by Seb Ransom.
Cresse cruos sanguinis, satietur sanguine cresse. Quod spero scitio, o scitio, scitio vindicta.
Truth, well met.
Thanks, poetry. What makes thou upon a stage?
Shadows.
Then will I add bodies to the shadows. Therefore, depart, and give Truth leave to shew her pageant.
Why, will Truth be a player?
No, but tragedia-like. For to present a tragedy in England, done but late, that will revive the hearts of drooping minds.
Whereof?
Marry, thus. Richard Plantagenet of the House of York, claiming the crown by wars, not by descent, had, as the chronicles make manifest, in the 22nd year of Henry VI, by act of Parliament entailed to him the crown and titles to that dignity, and to his offspring lawfully begotten, after the decease of that forenamed king, yet not contented for to stay the time, made wars upon King Henry, then the sixth, and by outrage suppressed that virtuous king and won the crown of England to himself. But since at Wakefield, in a battle pitched, outrageous Richard breathed his latest breath, leaving behind three branches of that line, three sons. The first was Edward, now the king, George of Clarence, and Richard, Gloucester's duke. Then Henry, claiming after his decease, his style, his crown and former dignity, was quite suppressed, till this Edward IV.
But tell me, Truth, of Henry, what ensued?
Imprisoned he, in the Tower of London lies, by strict command, from Edward, England's king, since cruelly murthered by Richard, Gloucester's duke.
Whose ghost was that did appear to us?
It was the ghost of George, the Duke of Clarence, who was detected in King Edward's reign, falsely of treason to his royalty. Imprisoned in the Tower was most unnaturally by his own brother, shamed a parent's stock, by Gloucester's Duke drowned in a butt of wine.
What shield was that he let fall?
A shield containing this, in full effect. Blood sprinkled springs. Blood spilt craves due revenge. Whereupon he writes, Cresse cruor, sanguis satitur, sanguin cresse, quod spero sitio, o sitio, sitio vindicta.
Oh, what manner of man was this Richard, Duke of Gloucester?
A man ill-shaped, crooked-backed, lame-armed withal, valiantly minded, but tyrannous in authority. So, during the minority of the young prince, he is made Lord Protector over the realm. Gentles, suppose that Edward now hath reigned full 22 years, and now, like to die, hath summoned all his nobles to the court to swear allegiance with the Duke, his brother. For truth, unto his son the tender prince, whose father's soul is now near flight to God, leaving behind 2 sons of tender age, 5 daughters to comfort the hapless queen, all under the protection of the Duke of Gloucester. Thus, gentles, excuse the length by the matter, and here begins Truth's pageant. Poetry, wend with me.
Please insert play here. Send a request on a postcard to the usual place. So that's our performed version, but now over to the taster of our exploring session on the complete play. So it's goodbye now from future Robert, and it's hello to past Robert.
Hello and welcome to this exploring session, and today we are looking at the true tragedy of Richard III, wherein is shown the death of Edward IV, with the smothering of the 2 young princes in the Tower, with a lamentable end of Shaw's wife, an example to all wicked women. And lastly, the conjunction and joining of the 2 noble houses, Lancaster and York, published in 1594 and played by the Queen's Majesty's Players some years preceding that date, and that's broadly speaking all the information I'm going to throw out at this time. It is, within the repertoire that we have explored in quite some detail now. We've done a great proportion of suggested Queen's Men plays. We only have a few more left to do over the remaining sessions that we know of. It starts getting more spurious the further down the list you go, but this one's fairly well confirmed. And to explore this true tragedy, it's all true, to explore truth, we have this wonderful team of readers, and in fact performing the personification of truth itself, and Richard is...
Hi, I'm Sarah Blake. I'm an actor, writer and director living in Germany.
And performing Hastings today will be...
Hello, I'm Helen Good. I'm a historian and I'm in Yorkshire.
And reading King Edward, brother to Richard, and Catesby is...
Hi, I'm Tamara. I'm an actor usually based in London, currently in Germany in my, don't remember how many weeks it's been, and I look forward to this.
And reading Citizen and Percival is...
Hi, I'm Alan Scott. I'm based in Suffolk, and I'm not an actor.
And reading Marquis and Page is...
I'm Aliki Chappell. I'm an actor, performer, translator, occasionally theatre maker, and I'm based in Lancashire, just for symmetry.
And performing today, Elizabeth Vaughan and Buckingham will be...
Liza Graham. I'm an actor, singer, and Renaissance text coach to actors in London.
And reading Hursley and Gray is...
I'm Elizabeth Rossing, and I'm an author living in Romford in Essex.
And reading Shaw's Wife and younger Edward, at one point Prince Edward, but he will become King Edward, briefly, is...
Hi, I'm Ruth Evans. I'm a specialist in late medieval literature, and I live in St. Louis, Missouri, USA.
Performing Lodowick and Rivers today is...
Hiya, my name is Simon Nader. I'm a Hertfordshire-based actor, writer, and director.
And performing poetry, Morton, Host, and Hote, we haven't decided on precise pronunciation, is...
Hello, I'm Francis Cups. I'm an actor living in Amsterdam.
And joining us today to comment and join in, a newbie to the group, do introduce yourself, say hello.
Hello, I'm Yitka Shtolova. I'm a Child Life Fellow in English Literature at Trinity College, Cambridge, and Richard is my research area, so I'm very excited about this.
Yes, very much here to tell us when we're horribly, horribly wrong. I am your host, Robert Crichton. And stop me from going off on flights of fancy. I am your host, and I will also be reading The Ghost of George, Duke of Clarence, who has a vitally lengthy speech in just a moment. Heaven help me. Without further ado, we're going to leap straight into the opening of the play. And we have a little bit of a sort of prologue induction thing to open it all off. So onto the stage, enter truth and poetry, and then to them the ghost of George, Duke of Clarence, who broadly speaking is going to sort of shout at them for a bit. Crisi crucior sanguis sater sanguine, crisi quod spiro cito, o cito cito vindicta. And he then exits.
Truth, well met.
Thanks, poetry. What makes thou upon a stage?
Shadows.
Then I will add bodies to the shadows. Therefore depart and give truth leave to show her pageant.
Why will truth be a player?
No, but tragedia like for to present a tragedy in England, done but late, that will revive the hearts of drooping minds.
Whereof?
Marry, thus. Richard Plantagenet, of the House of York, claiming the crown by wars, not by descent, had, as the chronicles make manifest, in the 22nd year of Henry VI, by Act of Parliament, entailed to him the crowns and titles to that dignity, and to his offspring lawfully begotten after the decease of that forenamed king. Yet not contented for to stay the time, made wars upon Henry, the King Henry, then the sixth, and by outrage suppressed that virtuous king, and won the crown of England to himself. But since at Wakefield, in a battle pitched, outrageous Richard breathed his latest breath, leaving behind three branches of that line, three sons. The first was Edward, now the king, George of Clarence, and Richard Gloucester's duke. Then Henry, claiming after his decease his style, his crown and former dignity, was quite suppressed till this Edward the Fourth.
But tell me truth, of Henry, what ensued?
Imprisoned he in the Tower of London lies, by strict command from Edward, England's king, since cruelly murdered by Richard Gloucester's duke.
Whose ghost was that did appear to us?
Ah, it was the ghost of George, the Duke of Clarence, who was attainted in King Edward's reign, falsely of treason to his royalty, imprisoned in the Tower, was most unnaturally, by his own brother, shame to parents' stock, by Gloucester's Duke, drowned in a butt of wine.
What shield was that that he let fall?
A shield containing this, in full effect. Blood sprinkled springs, blood spilt craves due revenge. Whereupon, he writes, Clesque cruo, sanguis satietur sanguine, clesque quod spero cito, oh, cito, cito, vindicta.
What manner of man was this Richard, Duke of Gloucester?
A man ill-shaped, crooked-backed, lame-armed withal, valiantly minded, but tyrannous in authority. So, during the minority of the young prince, he is made Lord Protector over the realm. Gentles, suppose that Edward now hath reigned full 22 years, and now like to die, hath summoned all his nobles to the court to swear allegiance with the Duke, his brother, for truth unto his son, the tender prince, whose father's soul is now near flight to God, leaving behind two sons of tender age, five daughters to comfort the hapless queen, all under the protection of the Duke of Gloucester. Thus, gentles, excuse the length by the matter. And here begins truth's pageant. Poetry, wend with me.
And off they jolly well wend. There's lots of, it's interesting that we've got, you know, the ghost comes on not only potentially saying that dialogue and or just generally roaring, but also it's written on a shield as well. So we have something emblem, an emblem with him too. How did you find truth as a character?
Hilarious. She was just like some kind of gossipy, like if I'd realized like how she was gonna go before I started, I think I would have done her as a sort of Yorkshire old lady on the 36 bus, like gossiping to her friend, because like, yeah, she was really getting into all the details there, which is what you want when you're listening to a story. Yeah,
if ever there was a role written for Brian Blessed in a dress.
Yes.
We've got it.
Marry thus.
Exactly. There you go.
Richard Plantagenet of the House of York. In a barrel of wine. Poetry, wind with me.
Okay. Didn't see that coming. And poetry, the personification of poetry. How did we feel about it? You know, who seems to be mostly feed line. But I do love the thanks poetry. What makes thou upon a stage?
I was going to say that as well. That's hilarious.
Shadows.
I don't know what truth's doing there either.
Yeah.
What are you doing on a stage?
Yes, I mean, it's a good question, you know, because it's called The True Tragedy. And it's a question of, you know, how self-knowing is that as you know, a question of what is true, what is not true.
Well, yeah, I mean, we get, you know, the Tudor bias that comes to us from Thomas More, among other sources. But I have to watch what I say here because there's actual experts in the room. But... I think just in terms of a brief précis of the story so far, which in our times is quite helpful to have before a history play, I think it is quite effective and economical.
Mm. Sometimes it is nice to just have, here's the stuff.
Yeah.
Here's the stuff. But you don't need to worry about this stuff. We don't need to fit it into dialogue. Just here's some stuff. And I think they're saying quite honest about that. I mean, it's also interesting for the time, if they assume the audience already knew all this stuff, it gives truth position to actually be really rattling through it in a sort of quite a comic way, potentially. Mm. Tamara?
Well, I was just going to bring up the fact that, and again, experts in the room, so do I remember correctly that historically Clarence actually rebelled against his brother? And so he was not an innocent drowned in a wine barrel. He actually genuinely, you know.
Oh, yeah, he had it coming.
Yeah.
I'd have killed him too.
Yeah. So truth is like, this is actually the truth. You may have heard that, you know, he did something. Totally didn't. No.
Sarah.
What I love about it is that it fulfills the role of a prologue. By, you know, telling us all the stuff, reminding us of all the stuff. If you were around at the time, you probably already knew it, as you said. But there is actually, it does do it in a really characterful way. There is actually these people, poetry and truth, you could see them as real people. They are real characters that you can actually play and do something with. Yeah. And give characterization to. And that isn't always something you get with a prologue. I mean, it's something that can be imposed upon a prologue, but here it's actually written into the lines itself, which I think is great, really fun. Mm.
Yeah. It's unusual to sorry.
Yeah, go on.
Thank you. Yeah, I was gonna say, it's unusual to see, not unheard of course, but unusual to see a prologue that's actually characters, as you say, which I think made that much more imminently kind of tangible to, oh, here's a story, rather than we're now going to tell you we're going to do a story and you better enjoy it, but we're going to say sorry and et cetera in advance because it will be awful. But if it's not, put your hands together. It's lovely to have something that's not that. So it was a gripper from the beginning. Very well read as well.
And though it's called Truth Pageant, I mean, we have done some work on this already, but I very much see it that poetry is sitting there cribbing.
Yeah.
And going, oh, that's good. Yeah, I'll have some of that. That's good. You can do things with it. That's what's really nice. It invites you to do things with it, which is lovely. Any additional thoughts before we get into actually, you know, some play? Alan, and then I think Helen wants to jump in.
Just a quick thought. I wonder whether this role would originally have been spoken by the person who normally did the clown or the vice, because it's got that sort of verbal structure to it that we've seen before with the vice characters.
Well, I mean, if we the composition of the Queen's Men is as it has been posited, then there could be quite a few potential clowns who could be reading this. It could also not be. But yeah, it's a thought. Helen.
Yeah, I was sort of going back to a bit earlier in the conversation, because you were saying, you know, there's poetry possibly making notes, and it suddenly occurred to me that, of course, the poet is one of the ways of saying the author. Mm. So, I mean, is this play the poet's play, informed by truth?
Mm. And I think not having a precise answer is really nice. I think, you know, it's that balance between poetry and truth. If you suggest by how it's performed that they are in competition, and that there isn't an absolute side as to whose view this is. Any other thoughts? Anyone want to jump in? Wave at me, Liza.
One very quick one. Rather than being a clown, truth may well be a boy dressed female. That truth is often personified as a woman.
Mm. Well, it does state her pageant, so she is gendered truth is. Anyone else? Wave at me if you want to jump in. Okay, I'm seeing nothing. I could be wrong. Okay, let's go into the next scene then. Some play action, as it were. Some drama occurs. So enter Edward the Fourth, Lord Hastings, Lord Grey, Marquess of Dorset, and Elizabeth. To them, Richard.
Long life, my sovereign, in all happiness.
an honourable age.
And that's all you'll get on the podcast for now. Many thanks to all the readers in that sequence. If you'd like to join in with these read-through and workshop sessions, they're all online, so you can get in touch. There are sign-up links in the show notes. Anyone can join in, so long as you've got an internet, you're on the right side of the world at the right time, and want to read some words. Anyone can join in. But till the next episode of this podcast, it's goodbye from me, Robert Crichton.